55. Alone together. I am the least equipped of all to aid you in this endeavor. I am finding that the powers I hold are in such conflict that the most simple of actions can be difficult. Relaine sat on the shattered plains alone and listened to the rhythms. Enslaved parchmen, deprived of true forms, weren't able to hear the rhythms. During his years spent as a spy, he'd adopted dull form, which heard them weakly. It had been so hard to be apart from them. They weren't quite true songs. They were beats with hints of tonality and harmony. He could attune one of several dozen to match his mood, or, conversely, to help alter his mood. His people had always assumed the humans were deaf to the rhythms, but he wasn't convinced. Perhaps it was his imagination, but it seemed that sometimes they responded to certain rhythms. They'd look up at a moment of frenzied beats, eyes getting a far-off look. They'd grow agitated and shout in time for a moment to the rhythm of irritation, or whoop, right on beat with a rhythm of joy. It comforted him to think that they might someday learn to hear the rhythms. Perhaps then he wouldn't feel so alone. He currently attuned the rhythm of the lost, a quiet yet violent beat with sharp, separated notes. You attuned it to remember the fallen, and that felt the correct emotion as he sat here outside Narok watching humans build a fortress from what used to be his home. They set a watchpost atop the central spire, where the five had once met to discuss the future of his people. They turned homes into barracks. He was not offended. His own people had repurposed the ruins of Stormseat into Narok. No doubt these stately ruins would outlast the Alethi occupation, as they had the listeners. That knowledge did not prevent him from mourning. His people were gone now. Yes, Parshman had awakened, but they were not listeners. No more than Alethi and Vedans were the same nationality simply because most had similar skin tones. Relaine's people were gone. They had fallen to Alethi swords or had been consumed by the Everstorm, transformed into incarnations of the old listener gods. He was, as far as he knew, the last. He sighed, pulling himself to his feet. He swung a spear to his shoulder, the spear they let him carry. He loved the men of Bridge Four, but he was an oddity, even to them. The parchman they allowed to be armed, the potential Voidbringer they had decided to trust, and wasn't he just so lucky? He crossed the plateau to where a group of them trained under Teft's watchful eye. They didn't wave to him. They often seemed surprised to find him there, as if they'd forgotten he was around. But when Teft did notice him, the man's smile was genuine. They were his friends. It was merely... How could Relaine be so fond of these men, yet at the same time want to slap them? When he and Scar had been the only two who couldn't draw Stormlight, they'd encouraged Scar. They'd given him pep talks, told him to keep trying. They had believed in him. Relaine, though? Well, who knew what would happen if he could use Stormlight? Might it be the first step in turning him into a monster? Never mind that he'd told them you had to open yourself to a form to adopt it. Never mind that he had the power to choose for himself. Though they never spoke of it, he saw the truth in their reactions. As with Dabid, they thought it best that Relaine remain without Stormlight. The Parshman and the Insane Man. People you couldn't trust as Windrunners. Five Bridgemen launched into the air, radiant and streaming with light. Some of the crew trained, while another group patrolled with Kaladin, checking on caravans. A third group, the 10 other newcomers that had learned to draw in Stormlight, trained with Pete a few plateaus over. That group included Lynn and all four of the other scouts, along with four men from other bridge crews and a single light-eyed officer. Kolat, the archer captain. Lynn had slid into Bridge Four's camaraderie easily, as had a couple of the bridgemen. Relaine tried not to feel jealous that they almost seemed more a part of the team than he did. Teft led the five in the air through a formation while the four others strolled toward Rock's drink station. Relaine joined them, and Yake slapped him on the back, pointing toward the next plateau over where the bulk of the hopefuls continued to train.
"That group can barely hold a spear properly," Yake said. "You ought to go show them how a real bridgeman does a kata, eh, Relaine?"
"Kalak help them if they have to fight those shellheads,"
Eth added, taking a drink from Rock.
No offense, Relaine."
Relaine touched his head where he had carapace armor, distinctively thick and strong as he held Warform, covering his skull. It had stretched out his Bridge 4 tattoo, which had transferred to the carapace. He had protrusions on his arms and legs, too, and people always wanted to feel those. They couldn't believe they actually grew from his skin and somehow thought it was appropriate to try to peek underneath.
"Relaine," Rock said, "is okay to throw things at Eth. He has hard head, too, almost like he has shell."
"It's all right," Relaine said, because that was what they expected him to say.
He accidentally attuned irritation, though, and the rhythm laced his words. To cover his embarrassment, he attuned curiosity and tried Rock's drink of the day.
"This is good. What is in it?"
"Ha! Is water I boiled kremlings in before serving them last night."
Eth spurted out his mouthful of drink, then looked at the cup, aghast.
"What?"
Rock said.
"You ate the kremlings easily."
"But this is like their bath water,"
Eth complained.
"Chilled," Rock said, "with spices. Is good taste."
"Is bath water,"
Eth said, imitating Rock's accent. Teft led the other four in a streaking wave of light overhead. Relaine looked up and found himself attuning longing before he stomped it out. He attuned peace instead. Peace, yes. He could be peaceful.
"This isn't working," Dreyu said. "We can't storming patrol the entirety of the shattered plains. More caravans are going to get hit like that one last night." "The captain says it's strange for those Voidbringers to keep raiding like this,"
Eth said.
"Tell that to the caravaneers from yesterday."
Yake shrugged.
"They didn't even burn much. We got there before the Voidbringers had time to do much more than frighten everyone. I'm with the captain. It's strange."
"Maybe they're testing our abilities," Eth said. "Seeing what Bridge 4 can really do."
They glanced at Relaine for confirmation.
Am I supposed to be able to answer?" he asked.
"Well," Eth said, "I mean, storms, Relaine. They're your kinsmen. Surely you know something about them."
"You can guess, right?" Yake said.
Rock's daughter refilled his cup for him, and Relaine looked down at the clear liquid.
"Don't blame them," he thought. "They don't know. They don't understand."
"Eth, Yake," Relaine said carefully, "my people did everything we could to separate ourselves from those creatures. We went into hiding long ago and swore we would never accept forms of power again. I don't know what changed. My people must have been tricked somehow. In any case, these fused are as much my enemies as they are yours. More, even. And no, I can't say what they will do. I spent my entire life trying to avoid thinking of them."
Teft's group came crashing down to the plateau. For all his earlier difficulties, Scar had quickly taken to flight. His landing was the most graceful of the bunch. Hobber hit so hard he yelped. They jogged over to the watering station, where Rock's eldest daughter and son began giving them drinks. Relaine felt sorry for the two. They barely spoke Alethi, though the son, oddly, was Vorin. Apparently, monks came from Yakaved to preach the Almighty to the Horn-Eaters, and Rock let his children follow any god they wanted. So it was that the pale-skinned young horn-eater wore a glyph ward tied to his arm and burned prayers to the Vorin Almighty instead of making offerings to the horn-eater Spren. Relaine sipped his drink and wished Renarin were here. The quiet, light-eyed man usually made a point of speaking with Relaine. The others jabbered excitedly but didn't think to include him. Parshmen were invisible to them. They'd been brought up that way. And yet he loved them because they did try. When Scar bumped him and was reminded that he was there, he blinked, then said,
"Maybe we should ask Relaine."
The others immediately jumped in and said he didn't want to talk about it, giving a kind of Alethi version of what he'd told them earlier. He belonged here as much as he did anywhere else. Bridge Four was his family, now that those from Narok were gone. Eshenai, Varanus, Thud. He attuned the rhythm of the lost and bowed his head. He had to believe that his friends in Bridge Four could feel a hint of the rhythms, for otherwise how would they know how to mourn with true pain of soul? Teft was getting ready to take the other squad into the air when a group of dots in the sky announced the arrival of Kaladin Stormblessed. He landed with his squad, including Lopin, who juggled an uncut gemstone the size of a man's head. They must have found a chrysalis from a beast of the chasms.
"No sign of Voidbringers today,"
Leighton said, turning over one of Rock's buckets and using it as a seat.
"But storms! The plains sure do seem smaller when you're up there."
"Yeah," Lopin said. "And bigger."
"Smaller and bigger?" Scar asked.
"Smaller," Leighton said, "because we can cross them so fast. I remember plateaus that felt like they took years to cross. We zip past those in an eye blink."
"But then you get up high," Lopin added, "and you realize how wide this place is. Sure, how much of it we never even explored. And it just seems big."
The others nodded, eager. You had to read their emotion in their expressions and the way they moved, not in their voices. Maybe that was why emotion spren came so often to humans, more often than to listeners. Without the rhythms, men needed help understanding one another.
"Who's on the next patrol?" Scar asked.
"None for today," Kaladin said. "I have a meeting with Dalinar. We'll leave a squad in Narok, but..." Soon after he left through the Oath Gate, everyone would slowly start to lose their powers. They'd be gone in an hour or two. Kaladin had to be relatively near. Sigzil had placed their maximum distance from him at around 50 miles, though their abilities started to fade somewhere around 30 miles.
"Fine," Scar said. "I was looking forward to drinking more of Rock's Kremling juice anyway."
"Kremling juice?"
Sigzil said, drink halfway to his lips. Other than Relaine, Sigzil's dark brown skin was the most different from the rest of the crew, though the bridgemen didn't seem to care much about skin color. To them, only eyes mattered. Relaine had always found that strange, as among listeners, your skin patterns had at times been a matter of some import.
"So," Scar said, "are we going to talk about Renarin?"
The 28 men shared looks, many settling down around the barrel of Rock's drink as they once had around the cook fire. There were certainly a suspicious number of buckets to use as stools, as if Rock had planned for this. The horn-eater himself leaned against the table he'd brought out for holding cups, a cleaning rag thrown over his shoulder.
"What about him?"
Kaladin asked, frowning and looking around at the group.
"He's been spending a lot of time with the scribes studying the Tower City," Nadam said. "The other day," Scar added, "he was talking about what he's doing there. It sounded an awful lot like he was learning how to read."
The men shifted uncomfortably.
"So?" Kaladin asked. "What's the problem?
Sigzil can read his own language. Storm's eye can read glyphs."
"It's not the same," Scar said.
"It's feminine,"
Drahi added.
"Drahi," Kaladin said, "you are literally courting a man."
"So?" Drahi said.
"Yeah. What are you saying, Cal?"
Scar snapped.
Nothing. I just thought Dre might empathize. That's hardly fair,
Dre said.
Yeah, Lopin added. Dre likes other guys. That's like, he wants to be even less around women than the rest of us. It's the opposite of feminine. He is, you could say, extra manly.
Yeah, Dre said.
Kaladin rubbed his forehead and Relaine empathized. It was sad that humans were so burdened by always being in mate form. They were always distracted by the emotions and passions of mating, and had not yet reached a place where they could put that aside. He felt embarrassed for them. They were simply too concerned about what a person should and shouldn't be doing. It was because they didn't have forms to change into. If Renarin wanted to be a scholar, let him be a scholar.
I'm sorry, Kaladin said, holding out his hand to calm the men. I wasn't trying to insult Dre.
But storms, men, we know that things are changing. Look at the lot of us. We're halfway to being light eyes. We've already let 5 women into Bridge 4, and they'll be fighting with spears. Expectations are being upended, and we're the cause of it. So let's give Renarin a little leeway, shall we?
Relaine nodded. Kaladin was a good man. For all his faults, he tried even more than the rest of them.
I have thing to say, Rock added. During last few weeks, how many of you have come to me saying you feel you don't fit in with Bridge 4 now?
The plateau fell silent. Finally, Sigsel raised his hand, followed by Scar and several others, including Haber.
Haber, you did not come to me, Rock noted.
Oh, yeah, but I felt like it, Rock.
He glanced down.
Everything's changing. I don't know if I can keep up.
I still have nightmares, Layton said softly, about what we saw in the bowels of Urethiru. Anyone else?
I have trouble with Lethe,
Huio said.
It makes me embarrassing. Alone.
I'm scared of heights, Torfin added. Flying up there is terrifying to me.
A few glanced at Teft.
What? Teft demanded. You expect this to be a feeling-sharing party because the storming horn-eater gave you a sour eye? Storm off! It's a miracle I'm not burning moss every moment of the day having to deal with you lot.
Natum patted him on the shoulder.
And I will not fight, Rock said. I know some of you do not like this. He makes me feel different. Not only because I am only one with proper beard and crew.
He leaned forward.
Life is changing. We will all feel alone because of this, yes? Ha! Perhaps we can feel alone together.
They all seemed to find this comforting. Well, except Lopin, who had snuck away from the group and for some reason was lifting up rocks on the other side of the plateau and looking underneath them. Even among humans, he was a strange one. The men relaxed and started to chat. Though Haber slapped Relaine on the back, it was the closest any of them came to asking how he felt. Was it childish of him to feel frustrated? They all thought they were alone, did they? Felt that they were outsiders? Did they know what it was like to be of an entirely different species? A species they were currently at war with? A species whose people had all been either murdered or corrupted? People in the tower watched him with outright hatred. His friends didn't, but they sure did like to pat themselves on the back for the fact.
We understand that you're not like the others, Relaine. You can't help what you look like.
He attuned annoyance and sat there until Kaladin sent the rest of them off to train the aspiring Windrunners. Kaladin spoke softly with Rock, then turned and paused, seeing Relaine sitting there on his bucket. Relaine, Kaladin said, why don't you take the rest of the day off?
What if I don't want special accommodation because you feel sorry for me?
Kaladin squatted down beside Relaine.
Hey, you heard what Rock said. I know how you feel. We can help you shoulder this. Do you really?
Relaine said.
Do you actually know how I feel, Kaladin Stormblessed? Or is that simply a thing that men say?
I guess it's a thing men say, Kaladin admitted, then pulled over an upside-down bucket for himself. Can you tell me how it feels? Did he really want to know? Relaine considered, then attuned resolve.
I can try.